Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
Is trust the missing piece in your marketing strategy? This episode is sponsored by OneTrust, the platform that empowers more than 10,000 businesses around the world to build stronger relationships with customers and enhance their compliance with global privacy requirements.
This is Allison Schiff, Managing Editor of Ad Exchanger, and my guest on the podcast this week is Michael Komasinski, the newly appointed global CEO of Merkle, the performance marketing and data-focused arm of Japanese holding company Dentsu Aegis. Dentsu bought Merkle in 2016, and it's been growing like a weed ever since, and even more so recently in light of the massive changes happening and in the works related to online identity. Speaking of the weeds, Michael gets into them on Mercury, Merkle's homegrown identity resolution solution. Say that five times fast. We also talk about Unified ID 2.0, the potential and the challenges, as well as how to separate the snake oil from the good stuff when it comes to identity resolution and cookieless technology. But first, let me take a moment to shill for AdExchanger's upcoming industry preview event. We've got a seriously good agenda for you. Industry preview will take place on a new date, Tuesday, February 22, 2022, at the Time Center in New York City. Join us to learn more about what to expect in the year ahead in data-driven digital media and marketing. We'll have executives from all the biggies, including Google and Meta, Nielsen, Snowflake, Instacart, MasterCard. We'll have the economist Hal Singer, the Hearts and Science CEO, and more. There's going to be a lot packed into this one-day conference, so visit adexchanger.com/upcoming events to learn more and request your invitation. Hey, Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Allison. Thanks for having me on.
So, by the way, Michael or Mike?
I'd go by Michael.
Okay. All right. Good to know. I don't want to be too casual.
No, it's all right. My mom calls me Mike, but she's the only one that's allowed to do that.
It's funny because usually parents will call you by your full name, but maybe you don't get in trouble a lot. I mean, you're an adult man.
But. Yeah, I did get in trouble a lot. I think you actually hit the nail on the head there.
Well, I feel like we might have already broken the ice, but let's like break the ice a little bit more. So what's something about you that not a lot of people know, like a fun fact that you can't find out through basic internet or something?
Sure. Although this is my go-to at those types of meetings. So it's becoming maybe less obscure, but it's an oldie but a goodie. I grew up on a farm. And so we had horses and cattle and wild cats and outside dogs. And it's especially funny because my colleague here at Dentsu, Jackie Kelly, who's the CEO of the Americas, she also grew up on a farm. But Jackie's was a big, like, professional farm, and ours was like kind of a smaller hobby thing. So we always have a good time joking around about that.
Where was this farm?
This was Edwardsburg, Michigan.
Right. Okay. I kind of vaguely know the geography of Michigan. Don't people hold up a hand and then
to get to the mitten?
The mitten, right.
Yes. It would be sort of opposite the thumb, if you will, in the southwest corner.
Got it. Okay. So you're new to your role. Your first day as global CEO of Merkle was January 1st. So you know, you're pretty newly minted there. It's a great day to start a new job, like new year, new you
yeah,
kind of thing. But you are not new to Merkle. So what brought you there like in 2015?
Yes, it's coming up on 7 years this year. You know, honestly, the simplest answer is it was Craig Dempster and David Williams, right? Because I think most people join companies for people. And those two, you know, I just really hit it off with them very quickly. And then as I met the rest of the leadership team, everything kept clicking. But you know, outside of people, the proposition was just so compelling. the way that they were trying to build the company, there was this hunger to always be on the cutting edge of, you know, whatever was new in the market. We still refer to that as fast currents. And it's something that our whole kind of business planning process still revolves around. It was just an exciting place to be. It had momentum, had agility, and all those things turned out to be true in hindsight. So it's been a really good almost 7 years.
But then in short order, Dentsu acquired Merkle, right? It was just the following year, I think, in 2016. And so how did that change life?
You know, it actually, it didn't change it that much, at least those parts that I just spoke to. In fact, it accelerated it because a big part of the Dentsu acquisition was about scaling Merkle globally for Dentsu, right? And for us as Merkle shareholders and employees. But Dentsu invested a ton of money in Merkle and accelerated our ability to do acquisitions, build scale and depth in the company, and to build out the business globally. And that became a big opportunity for me because I could see that coming. And so I'd raise my hand to take over Europe and help build that out. And then that's exactly what ended up happening. And when I went over to Europe, we had about 800 people, maybe about $85 million of revenue. And when I left to come back to the Americas at the end of 2020, it was almost 4,000 people and over $400 million of revenue. So that was just, it was like the experience of a lifetime. I mean, to grow something that big, that fast, was everything that I joined Merkle for. And so, in fact, the Dentsu transaction really accelerated that.
So what are your priorities in the new role as global CEO?
Well, we need to continue that fast current focus, right? This is a growth company, first and foremost. It always has been. It's got a very strong solutions and commercial culture, kind of deep in the DNA. And you know, we have to continue to look for the things that are going to drive this business. And that's not rocket science. I mean, that's talking to clients, paying attention to what's going on in the market, but certainly being able to execute on it. I think what's probably changed a little bit here in the last year or two especially is that we can't just define that for Merkle only. That's an important part of it, right? We're a big, you know, soon to be, $2 billion business, and we need to perform in our own right. But we also need to perform with the rest of Dentsu, right? We need to identify solutions with the other service lines, like creative and media, and support global integrated accounts. And so those are things that are important to the kind of collective success of the broader company. And I think that that agenda is, you know, more important now than maybe it was a couple of years ago.
Did growing up on a farm prepare you for any of those tasks?
I don't know. I mean, look, it gives you a strong sense of independence, and certainly the ability to figure things out without a lot of help. I think those are probably traits that have been really valuable the last few years.
Yeah, that's a good answer. What is the best way to think about Merkle these days? Because I think of Merkle as a sort of like the data arm of Dentsu, which I feel like is accurate, but might be a little reductive.
Yeah, it's a great question. I get this in different forms and fashion from time to time. It kind of depends on how you're measuring importance or influence, Allison. Like our role as the data center of excellence within Dentsu is really important because it differentiates all of the other offerings in Dentsu. It gives us positioning as a network. And I think it drives a lot of our innovation in, you know, what is probably one of the most important topics. However, if you were to measure revenue that is specifically derived from like data products and services, it's actually relatively low versus the rest of the revenue that we create as a MarTech and analytics service provider, right? So the majority of the business is really built around implementing and servicing the various marketing clouds and or kind of performance-oriented, customer-centric solutions that our clients ask us to either build or help them with. So it's a kind of depends on how you measure it. It's an important role, but certainly from a revenue standpoint, it's a much more diversified business.
Just considering the world we live in and the tectonic shifts that are happening, particularly related to identity, like how is Merkle, you know, going to have to roll and change with those changes? I mean, you're in a good position because, you know, you've been very data driven since the beginning and, you know, of course, use the tools at your disposal. Some of those tools, I'm sure, were cookie related. But, you know, having been, you know, always sort of steeped in data, I'm assuming, you know, you try to look ahead and prepare for all eventualities, but it's still a very complicated and weird world. So, like, how are you guys changing to deal with all of this stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the simplest answer is the investment that we've made in our Mercury identity platform. That identity resolution capability is something that's always been a part of Merkle and the data platforms that we built and managed for clients for many years. But we really stepped up that capability a couple of years ago with the acquisition of Foursight, which was a small identity services provider at the time that we thought had a real industry-leading capability around identity graph and some of the various methodologies that go into that. And that's turned out to be a really prescient acquisition for us. So we've continued to invest in and around that as part of the Mercury platform. And we see that as, you know, one of our industry leading solutions, and we're going to keep driving and refining that, for the foreseeable future.
Well, let's talk about Mercury a little bit more. So Mercury with a K, everybody, yes. Of course, because it's Merkle with a K.
Yes.
So just talk a little bit more about exactly like what it is, like what differentiates it and like where it sits in this universe of other identity solutions. Also keeping in mind that, of course, like all the holding companies, like the really humongo ones are also making multi-billion dollar investments in identity right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's do it. All right. So I'll get a little bit technical just for a couple of sentences. And then
this is Ad Exchanger talk.
Yeah, that's right. I know we're going to go deep, right? And then I'll kind of maybe comment on, you know, some of the industry a little more broadly. But look, each Mercury ID is a persistent identifier. Right? It's meant to individually represent one marketable adult in the United States. And so all of our Mercury IDs are groomed meticulously and continuously from terrestrial PII sources. And then they're pseudo-anonymized in a privacy-safe manner. And our Mercury Universe then is a compilation of these IDs and their associated data variables. And it's built to represent the complete population of marketable adults in the country, right? And so that Mercury Universe is used to help our clients calibrate and grow their first party data. And each client owned connection is groomed and keyed with client specific persistent Mercury IDs, which means that clients with quality first party data and or those with enough direct customer interaction to maintain them can experience match rates to Mercury as high as 90%, while those without that type of direct data will likely match at rates lower than that. And that kind of gets me into the match rate, gets me into sort of this broader commentary of the industry that you were touching on. And I guess I've got sort of two different thoughts, right? One would be for clients listening and would be, you know, buyer beware, right? Like any identity or platform partner can claim high match rates and be correct. But it's important to know like what is being matched and how that is being accomplished. And lack of specificity in the KPI of match rate really only invites like more opacity in the ecosystem and in the marketing results. And you know, to keep that going, just my advice would be that every marketer should educate themselves by testing wide and often. And in addition to that, an often overlooked factor is to be really rigorous about the results before testing begins. Because like any large established players are expert at designing tests that are most likely to put their results in the best light. So, you know, clients should take the time to discuss the nuance of results measurement with their partners, especially when we're head to head or when there's multiple people head to head in a process. And I think clients would be glad that they did that. And when we see them do that, we know they get better results.
I mean, do you think there's a lot of snake oil out there, or is it just the normal sales process that we're seeing? Personally, I feel like I'm getting tons of pitches to cover this and that and everyone's cookieless solution, and it all sounds amazing. And oh, guess what? They never even really relied on cookies, but whatever. Of course they did.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a little bit of both. Yes, there is some snake oil out there. But then, like I was saying, like there are just pluses and minuses of different platforms. And so we really need educated buyers to run good processes where they really understand those nuances and assumptions. So there are some other good platforms out there, to be clear. So it's a mix of both. And I think clients have to really be on their toes to sort of weed those things out.
I mean, you kind of alluded to this. I mean, one, just broadly, like you were saying, is to educate yourself and to ask questions. And, you know, one question would be, you know, looking behind the match rate or like really understanding what that means instead of taking it just on face value. But what are some other questions that marketers, you know, can ask of their potential vendors so that, you know, they're not only demonstrating that they are smart, you know, and that they know what's what, but that they'll get, you know, good answers, right? Like you have to ask the right questions. Otherwise, you're not going to get the information you need to make smart, informed decisions.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, if we maybe sort of touch more broadly on it, I think just talking about sort of like cookieless in general, right? And clients trying to get their organizations and capabilities ready for deprecation of third-party cookie and device ID. Like they're asking a lot of questions about how they'll be able to reach specific audiences and target them and to conduct effective measurement given all the platform changes. And so we see questions about how they can use identity solutions in order to continue to engage with their customers given the platform changes. And there's a lot of interest in understanding ways to conduct analysis in a privacy-safe manner using data clean room environments. And I think that's an area that we're going to see a ton of activity in 2022. There's really sort of two camps of buyers, right? Those that are, like I would say, actively involved in planning for change, whether it's identity, analytics, or measurement, and or those that are not yet involved enough. And we think those that are involved and going through that education process are going to have a big competitive advantage going forward.
So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're just going to stick with the identity theme because there's a lot to say. But we'll also get into commerce a little bit because Merkle has made some acquisitions on that front. And we'll also talk a little bit about this this report that Merkle puts out, which is kind of like an executive playbook of sorts with advice for just being strategic in the year ahead. So we'll talk about that too. Stick with us.
Hello, I'm Sarah Sluice, Executive Editor of AdExchanger. I'm here with Ryan Carlin, who is Director of Product Management for our sponsor, OneTrust. Hi, Ryan.
Hello, Sarah. It's great to be here with you today.
Ryan, what are the main challenges your customers are facing today?
It's a great question. As consumer expectations have changed, privacy regulations and the tech solutions we use every day have evolved to give people greater visibility and control over who has access to their data and how it's used. At the same time, there's still a demand for personalized advertising and experiences. Delivering on all these expectations has required investment in new tools and operational processes, and it's much easier said than done. But publishers and brands are finding competitive advantage in bringing privacy to the front of conversations and establishing trust with their customers.
How can brands find that competitive advantage in this environment?
When we think about these brand-consumer relationships, chief marketing officers, chief privacy officers, and chief information officers are now the stewards and gatekeepers that can make or break them. Instead of viewing privacy requirements as a burden or obligation, leading companies are seizing the opportunity to differentiate through transparency and building better engagement and loyalty by honoring consumer consent and preferences and how personal data is collected and used. The more customers trust you and see value in what you deliver using their data, the more data they'll entrust you with, and the better your product and experience will become.
How does OneTrust enable clients to seize this opportunity?
OneTrust has defined the privacy category and provides a platform for clients to automate and operationalize this transparency and trust. From the website for your local coffee shop to multinational companies with customers and users worldwide, our suite of tools make it easy to comply with privacy regulations and enable consumers to make informed choices at every touch point, so companies can stay ahead of customer needs, deliver the right experience at the right time, and do all of this while future-proofing their data programs against growing and evolving requirements.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
Okay, and we are back. So, identity. We were talking about Mercury before the break, so Merkle's own technology, but you also, you know, have to choose who to partner with out there in the ad tech ecosystem, the sort of morass of vendors. And you also have to advise clients on what they should test and who to partner with. Maybe, you know, in addition to, you know, using Merkle, or maybe, you know, just not using or Mercury, maybe not using Mercury, but using other partners, right? I mean, because you're also, you know, kind of a fiduciary for them, right? You're giving them advice on how to do the best for themselves. So, first off, like, how do you decide who to partner with and what solutions to test? I mean, like, for example, I know you guys very recently partnered with OpenX to use OpenAudience, but there are just like so many graph solutions out there. And so we don't have to talk specifically about OpenX, but what says to Merkle, yeah, like this is a vendor that I want on my, you know, sort of preferred list?
Yeah. So It's kind of broad, but I'd say the most complete answer is that, like, we're willing to consider like any initiative or partnership that promises to strengthen people-based, transparent ecosystem connectivity and interoperability. Right. And there's a lot of big words there. But yeah. If you drill into kind of each one of those in that sort of list at the end, right? Like, people-based, right? Anything that's sort of first-party, PII-oriented, because we just really believe in the power of that. And then transparent ecosystem and connectivity speaks to, you know, just sort of partners that are transparent about their secret sauce, right? Or at least to the extent that they can be.
Right, not so secret sauce, but at least making an effort to give you some sense of the recipe.
Exactly. No one expects you to, you know, hang your trade secrets, like, you know, out on the front of your website. But, you know, it shouldn't be completely opaque either. And I just think you get a sense of that when you meet with people and talk about how they describe that. And then the interoperability word is probably, you know, relatively straightforward, but you know, we want to work with partners where they've got, well, really where the technology is easy to work with, right? Not just with us, but with our clients, you know, the interfaces, the way the pipes flow. Yeah, it just makes sense, right? Like if it's too hard, it's just not worth it.
Is Mercury interoperable?
It is.
I mean, of course, but makes sense. And what about industry initiatives? Like, would Merkle entertain signing up for like Unified ID 2.0? And, you know, why Why not?
Yeah, that's a very timely question. The simplest answer is yes. We actually have completed the integration with UID 2.0, and we're actually moving to production. And UID will be available for transactions within our platform as of next week. So it's a very timely question.
Really? Is that out there?
That is
not. I broke a little news.
That is not out there yet.
This guys, is why you got to listen to our podcast.
That's right.
We talk to the right people. Well, let's stick with UID 2.0 for a second. I feel like it's important to test everything, and UID 2 definitely has a lot of momentum behind it, but there are challenges also. What do you think about, say, you know, the fact that there are like challenges in testing in Europe? Because I get this feeling that, you know, we're going to end up with sort of like balkanized identity solutions, but if you take a step back and think about it, you really can't have that because, you know, the internet shouldn't be balkanized, and it's going to be probably pretty messy before it unmessifies. So considering that there are all of these challenges standing in the way for initiatives like UID2, like what does that say to you, and does that impede your testing at all?
It doesn't impede the testing, but I agree with two points you made there, right? Like it is going to be messy for a while, especially when you look at things on a global basis. I lived this firsthand, living in Europe for almost 5 years. It's just really hard with the regulatory environment there to, sort of build scale around solutions. And what it does is it tamps down the types of partners that are available, right? Because there isn't necessarily scale to build around because you have multiple smaller countries that collectively add up to a big European Union. But you do still have like country-specific nuances. And then you've got, you know, just a regulation environment that just doesn't allow for the breadth and depth, I guess, of partners and solutions. And so that's a big inhibitor to be able to build out like a truly global solution. And I honestly, I'm not sure if I know what the future of that is. We scaled back some of our ambition around that a couple of years ago. And we haven't given up on it, but you know, it will be very asymmetric region to region because of that.
And when you say you scaled back your ambition, what do you mean?
We're not trying to build out exactly the same type of Mercury infrastructure in Europe that we have in the US.
Hmm. Right. I mean, out of necessity.
Yes. Yes.
So one more identity question, and then we'll turn to commerce for a second. But, you were giving some advice before the break about what brands should do when they're kicking some tires on some vendors. But I also get the sense that a lot of buyers are a little bit standoffish. I mean, in the sense that they're maybe not as involved in the discussions happening related to like third-party cookie alternatives. They're kind of waiting for their partners, whether that be their tech partners or their agency partners, to, I don't know, figure it out for them and send them an email after to say this is what to do. But I feel like that's not the best thing, because then, you know, their points of view aren't going to be as represented as they should be. So, I mean, I think the answer is no, but I mean, are buyers involved enough in the discussions happening related to all these third-party cookie alternatives and identity resolution, initiatives, all of that?
No, some. I mean,
some, yeah.
I'd say generally, no. It's a nascent topic still. So generally, no is the answer, right? But it is really refreshing when you start to work with clients that like really get that and want to get ahead. And you see them making like big investments in their first party data infrastructure. They're really trying to build towards a new data and measurement paradigm. And yeah, you've got that in the background. Welcome to New York City.
Yep, me too. Recording from Astoria right by a hospital and a police station. But please go on.
Yes. And even really like thinking about how they're going to interact with customers to keep that first party data set like really strong and up to date, right? And so like that, and those clients are thinking about that then in terms of how does that capability ripple out through the way that they're going to measure, the way that they're going to target audiences, who they want to reach, and therefore what types of experiences and interactions they need to be building to be able to, you know, get permission, right, to be able to contact people. It's just really interesting when people have that vision and get it. And then, you know, back to the generally no, there are a lot of clients that are still a little too passive about it. But, you know, like that, the next 2 years will create the motivation to ramp that up. Yeah. And I think maybe a little bit of some of the deadlines moving might have contributed to some of that.
For sure. I mean, when I have a deadline change, I'm just like, yes. And I completely forget about it until it's breathing down my neck again. So so changing gears now. I mean, I could talk about identity and cookies all day, but let's get into commerce and retail, which are just like massive themes for the past few years and only getting bigger, just e-commerce in particular. So what was the rationale behind the Live Area acquisition? Also, what is Live Area exactly? And what is Merkle's plan for just expanding more deeply into commerce and, you know, like the customer experience side of commerce?
Yeah. So why don't I start with what is Live Area first, and then I'll kind of go to that broader question. So Live Area was an acquisition that we closed over the summer. It actually was a carve-out of a publicly traded company called PFS Web. And essentially Live Area is a commerce and experience agency that has a really strong technical and experience delivery around commerce platforms, right? Said simply, like they're just awesome at building like commerce websites and really thinking about that customer journey. So they think about sort of the content that nurtures someone along to, you know, that environment, and then, you know, flawless sort of product hosting and presentation and, you know, all the clicks that get you to a transaction. Just been an awesome acquisition for us. About 650 mm-hmm. people, mostly based, all the clients are pretty much, I take that back, like 90% US, about 50 people in the UK. And then some of the delivery done out of India. There's an awesome team there supporting some of the technical delivery. Mm-hmm. And sort of to your broader question. Yeah. So commerce really fits with the Merkle strategy in that it's now like it's an inextricable part of a customer journey. For like so many brands, so many verticals, right? Not all yet, but like almost every client is thinking about commerce now as an inherent part of their main customer journey, right? Not some sort of like bolt-on that sits on the side that's like a, you know, another sales channel. And so it is a fit with our strategy because it completes a very logical customer journey in many cases that's now just like, you know, the main funnel, so to speak. But commerce transactions themselves are also an awesome form of first party data. And that's also why we got into other spaces like the promotion mm-hmm. space. Where we help clients develop programs that help them gain first-party data that then can be, in turn, you know, recycled and reused to drive either like ongoing relationships via CRM and loyalty programs or fed into sort of identity and audience development type of work to extend audiences for prospecting, lookalike targeting, et cetera. So it's just a really good fit with several different themes that we have kind of, you know, crisscrossing the business here.
And handy as I've heard something about third-party cookies going away. So
right, exactly, right. I mean, if you're a brand and you want to know who your customers are, right, and you realize that knowing people, you know, in a first-party way is essentially the lifeblood of your business, you're going to develop customer engagement programs that allow you to get to know people. And then you're going to make sure that it's super easy for them to transact with you so that you can, A, monetize that relationship, but also, you know, as sort of a point of validation. It also helps with data hygiene, right? You might get address updates or things of that nature. And it's a great way just to engage people in a buying process, which is, you know, I think more and more the point, right? It's not just the transaction. It's like making it fun, shopping as an experience, et cetera.
So you guys bought Foursight for Mercury and you bought LiveArea for commerce. Obviously you can't share any specifics about other potential acquisitions, but are there other areas where it might make sense for you guys to buy versus build?
Sure. Right. We've been an acquisitive company for a long time and that will continue. And it's really, that part's based more in just pure business imperative. We're in a really fast moving business that is scaling very, very rapidly. And so there's just almost no way to build your way to the type of scale that we need, you know, with the competition that we go up against. So that just becomes just a practical aspect of building the business. In answer to your question specifically though, I would look for more deals from us in the commerce and experience space. We need to continue to build more scale there. There are certain maybe key technology partners where we would like to be stronger in maybe certain parts of their cloud. So we could get quite targeted about shoring up some of those capabilities. And then just broadly, you know, in types of, you know, kind of data platform, sort of cloud architecture businesses is of interest as well. There's just so much migration to the cloud of all the enabling technology that we work with. We see a ton of opportunity to just continue to ride that trend and help our clients basically migrate their tech infrastructure to the cloud. And we think that's got 5 to 10 years of runway in front of it.
So my last question to sort of take us home. Every year for I think the past 10 years or so, Merkle has published, I think I mentioned this earlier before the break, a sort of like executive playbook. You call them the imperatives that's meant to help brands figure out what are the most important strategic considerations for the year ahead. So I believe there are three main ones this year, taking a broader view of customer data, using measurement as a catalyst for change, and doing more with commerce to drive loyalty. So let's expand actually on that second one, just what you mean by using measurement as a catalyst for change.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Actually, going back the last couple of years, we've written an imperative that kind of touches on something related to this. And it really is all about how should clients rewire their internal organization, right? A lot of times as like consultancies or agencies, we talk about capabilities that clients should be availing themselves of. But, you know, this really gets more to how they should rewire themselves, how they should run their organization differently. And so this year's imperative is, I guess, in its simplest form, suggesting to clients that they should think about the top level goals that they want to achieve. And I mean top level, like sales or units or, you know, the big KPIs that probably people are incented on. And then really work hard to break those down into the component KPIs that ultimately drive that. And so you can imagine like a great big sort of like metric tree, like a decision tree where you sort of break those things down and really then identify where there are KPIs missing in the organization that are essential, but, you know, either aren't produced or, you know, there isn't a system in place to do that. And our suggestion is that they should work to shore that up, because producing these types of outcomes, right? It's actually not a subjective thing, I think, is what we're trying to say, is that, you know, the outcomes that clients want really can be analytically broken down. And then you want to shape the enterprise system to make sure it produces the outputs that are the components that drive that. And too often we think clients sort of measure what's available as opposed to what they need. And oftentimes not with a pure sort of analytical view of how the activities that they're undertaking ladder up to the goals that they actually really care about. You'll see people chasing, you know, some, you know, metric and not really knowing how it ladders up to how many units they moved next month. So in some ways it's a fairly basic imperative, but, you know, as any client will tell you, inside of these big organizations, this is easier said than done. So it's a reminder that it's important. And I think with the prevalence of the marketing clouds now touching more and more of the enterprise, I think there's probably more of an opportunity to do this in a little more of a turnkey way than maybe there was like 5 years ago.
Yeah, no, I think it's great advice. Sometimes the best advice is simple advice. So I think sometimes things are measured, as you were saying, just because they've always been measured or because they are easy to measure. And then they become, you know, they're not the gold standard, but they become what everybody focuses on to their own detriment, but they don't realize it.
Right. That's exactly it.
Michael, thank you for shooting the breeze on AdExchanger Talks.
Thanks for having me on, Allison. It's really enjoyable.
This episode was sponsored by OneTrust. In today's evolving privacy landscape, it can be tough to stay one step ahead. That's why the OneTrust Consent and Preference Management Platform enhances consumer trust and automates privacy compliance. Use the most powerful, easy-to-use consent and preference management platform to capture, centralize, govern, and sync consent, preferences, and first-party data, while keeping trust and transparency at the forefront of all consumer interactions. Get started today by visiting onetrust.com/buildtrust to learn more and request a free demo.